From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, July 7th, 2017. And on this day, green slime is back in Casco Bay. We'll look at why it's happening and what it means. And we'll begin our summer series on disappearing trades in Maine. That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
It's back. The unwelcome bright green slime that showed up around Casco Bay during the drought last summer has come back with a vengeance, and this year it's arrived even earlier. The environmental group Friends of Casco Bay is actively monitoring the situation and says it's worried about what algae blooms like these say about the health of the bay. Susan Sharon has our latest installment of Beyond 350, Confronting Climate Change.
With climate change and an excess of nitrogen from stormwater and wastewater runoff, algal blooms are becoming more common around the world. Common, and says Casco Baykeeper Ivy Frinoka, concerning.
These algal blooms are breaking my heart. This is so extensive. We were just here a week ago, and the bloom was just beginning and has really, really spread.
Wearing thigh-high rubber boots, Frinoka is standing behind the Hannaford in South Portland's Mill Cove, where what looks like a soggy layer of astroturf has settled over the mudflats, using up oxygen and suffocating everything underneath it. Researcher Mike Doan says clams can be especially vulnerable.
Last year, we were seeing clams that were certainly having trouble, you know, necks out at low tide, lying on the surface, and eventually finding more and more dead clams.
So far, no dead clams are showing up. In fact, there are no signs of clams at all. But the Friends of Casco Bay have only just begun their monitoring. They had hoped last year's outbreak was an anomaly, caused by a combination of excess nitrogen and an extended drought, lots of sun and little rain. But this spring, there's been more rain. The water is a little bit colder, and still, the slime is thriving.
I mean, that's good, though.
After measuring the acidity of the mud in and around the algae, the team heads back to their office, where intern Emily Haggett has collected a DNA sample of the slime that has also showed up in Portland's Back Cove and in Pleasantdale Cove in South Portland.
We know it's a green algae, and we suspect that it's the genus Ulva, sea lettuce. We don't know what species it is.
Haggett will send a DNA extraction to a lab to be sequenced, but however it is ultimately identified, no one is happy about its arrival or the thought of it becoming a trend. Casco Bay is one of the fastest warming bodies of water in the world.
And that's my concern. As water temperatures get warmer and warmer, we're going to see more of this sort of thing. Episodes where you might think of them as common to our south now become more common here as the temperatures warm.
In other water bodies, harmful algal blooms have sometimes been the precursor to dead zones, oxygen-depleted areas where marine life can no longer survive. Frinoka says her goal as Casco Baykeeper is to take action before the bay is seriously impaired. She says there are ways for others to help.
We've got to stop using lawn fertilizers that get into our waterways, and we can reduce pet waste, make sure that pet waste isn't getting into our waterways, and then we can look at reducing our carbon emissions.
Frinoka says sewage treatment operators are also taking steps to address the problem. Portland's East End Wastewater Treatment Facility, for example, will need to reduce nitrogen 20% to 40% as part of a new permit requirement. But in the meantime, Frinoka says Casco Bay is sending out a signal that conditions are changing and not for the better. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
And you are listening to Maine Things Considered. Bangor Community College is working to fill a nursing gap in one of the most rural counties in the state with the launch of a nursing program in Dover, Foxcroft. Piscataquis County, like many places in Maine, is facing a critical shortage of qualified nurses.
And this is just the first of hopefully many thinking outside the box programs that we're going to unroll.
Jennifer Cavari is director of advancement at Eastern Maine Community College. She says many students cannot travel long distances to attend school, but they can travel to education centers closer to home. So the classes will be distance delivered to the Dover Foxcroft Higher Education Center, and students will get their clinical experience at the local hospital, Mayo Regional.
If we can bring it to them, they don't have to drive an hour and a half to us every day, and they'll be doing their training in the places of potential future employment. Everybody wins.
The pilot class will be limited to about 8 to 10 students. They'll start this fall and graduate in 2019. The college is planning two informational sessions on Monday, July 17th in Dover Foxcroft for students interested in the program. You are listening to Maine Things Considered on Maine Public Radio. I'm Nora Flaherty. Later this hour, the new Netflix show GLOW looks at women's pro wrestling on TV. But first, according to an Oxford University study, nearly half the jobs considered indispensable today, like loan officers, paralegals, baristas, and waiters, will disappear over the next 30 years. As lifestyles and technologies change, so does the demand for certain occupations. For example, when's the last time you saw a lamplighter or a town crier or a door-to-door salesman? Well, this summer we are undertaking a series to look at some of the not-so-common skills that are still being put to good use. We're calling it Once Upon a Job, and in this installment, we travel to Bangor to meet a man who spends a lot of time looking down at the pavement.
I've been staring at shoes for 20 years. It's one of the first things I notice about people. Is, you know, it's just habit. You're walking along the street, and you're looking at people's shoes.
That's because shoes are Jonathan Lambert's business. Lambert is a professional cobbler, and yes, he says sometimes people are surprised to learn that cobblers still exist, and not just on the pages of a fairy tale.
I don't have elves. No, they revolted a long time ago.
Lambert, his mother, and a 19-year-old apprentice work out of a shop in downtown Bangor. The family-run business known as Yankee Cobbler is a cheerful jumble of strapless sandals, busted biker boots, and pointy prom shoes, all waiting for attention. If a shoe can be fixed, Lambert says he'll do it, whether it's a $5 flip-flop or a $1,000 pair of designer boots.
You know, typically if you're spending, you know, $100 or more on footwear, that is typically worth repairing, and savings compared to buying new.
Now, how common is that? We kind of live in a throwaway society these days where people can go down to certain budget shoe shops and buy a pair of shoes for $10.
Correct. That is one of the challenges that we run into as a trade. It is a declining trade, so what's typically happening is people retire or have to leave the trade due to medical issues or whatever, and there's no one to take them over. So they either try to sell the equipment at wholesale or try to find a buyer, and they, you know, buy it at a minimal cost.
When Lambert set up his business 12 years ago, he was able to acquire a complete shop's worth of machines for cutting, nailing, gluing, and stitching as a single lot on eBay from someone getting out of the business. So he says it was affordable, even though much of the equipment, such as the stitching machine, is pretty old.
That's like the sound of the 19th century right there.
It is, absolutely. The guts of this machine is probably 120 years old.
Lambert became interested in shoes as a high school kid when he got a job with a shop that specialized in orthopedic footwear and Birkenstocks. Bangor had its own cobbler then, the old Yankee Shoe Repair Shop. But in 2004, it was gutted by fire. Soon, desperate clients were sending their beloved combat boots, broken heels, and torn soles to the next nearest cobbler 60 miles away in Waterville. The onslaught caused that shop to seek an apprentice, and it was Lambert who answered the call.
I thought it would be a good career path, so I went down and trained with him part-time for close to a year and been busy ever since.
At times, Lambert says he was overwhelmed with work, so overwhelmed that his customers were waiting as long as 6 months for shoe repairs. But after taking on an apprentice and getting his mother to help out, the wait is now less than a month. Projects run the gamut from replacing heels and fixing worn-out toes to restoring family heirlooms like antique boots and vintage pumps. Some customers, he says, quite literally want to walk in their grandparents' shoes. Once upon a time, every town in Maine would have had at least one cobbler. Not only did they do the usual fixing of boots and shoes, but they also repaired belts and harness straps. With new technology, 3D printing, and increased automation set to overtake a number of jobs in the coming decades, Lambert's not sure how long he can keep filling a niche. In his mid-30s now, he's a long way from retirement, but he does wonder what his business will be like in 30 years.
So I'd like to see, you know, our society move back into the quality over quantity, you know, and items that are repairable rather than throwaway. I do have two young sons, so Lord willing, they'll be willing to take it over, or one of them will. We'll see. If not, then I suppose I'll try to sell it and get somebody in here that will care about the community as much as I do and make a go of it.
There are only about 10 professional cobblers left in the entire state, and the man who taught Lambert everything he knows, he's retiring this year. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Friday, July 7th, 2017. Thanks to our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.